Hello and welcome to the C-Suite Business Show, where we talk about some of the most exciting developments in new business generation, from our own consultancy experience to the latest strategies and technologies available to you, the C-Suite Business Community. And I'm your host, Nigel May. Well, welcome to this podcast, and I thought it would be a more sensible way of presenting this rather than just a written article on a website. And by the way, that is available, and there is a download as well that you can read at your leisure on a tablet or however you want to consume your content. But the point of this is to look at the main title and understand that there are very few people who can actually impact the way a business can move forward, especially if part of the environment or some of the players are doing something that doesn't work. And so, in my opinion, what's required is a wholesale change to do with sales and marketing. But it's a big ask. It's a big deal. And I wouldn't be talking about it or doing a podcast on it if I didn't think it was viable or a logical way forward. So, but I mean, as CFO, I know you're inundated with requests for budget. I mean, especially from marketing. And as the person who controls the finances, you're expected to make a value judgment on the expenditure whilst, I suppose, assessing or being able to assess the pros and cons of the budget request you've just been given. So like I said, I've written and done this. It's expressly for CFOs, for it to be treated almost like a one-stop shop, one location, so to speak, to get a handle on these marketing requests, even if they are stomping their feet and demanding, but I want more. I mean, the trouble is, very few marketing personnel can prove an ROI, and they probably never did in the past either. But there is a significant change happening, if you haven't already noticed. Businesses are starting to increase the salaries for senior marketing people. The most recent I've seen, which is quite surprising, was one business looking to pay 350 grand as a one-off payment, followed by 250 to 350 grand a year. It's like nearly £750,000 a year for someone in marketing. I mean, what's going on? Others are more frequently tipping 250 grand a year. I mean, that's not to mention the headhunting costs or the recruitment costs. But the common desire is for someone who's got a couple of years, decades experience under their belt who can move the needle for the proposing business. But there's a big problem. It's the two-decade experienced professionals who have caused the problem in the first place. And that's why I produced this article, is for CFOs as an explanation as to why businesses are finding sales and growth so difficult, with much of it falling at the feet of technology and the rest as a result of lazy B2B marketers who in the past have believed they could just rely on salespeople to pick up the slack. You heard it all before. I mean, the marketers, they want money for the MarTech stack. Without it, the business is going to suffer. Or whether it's the MarTech stack or the tech stack, the reality is B2B marketers are behaving as if they're selling to consumers. And they've failed over the past 10 to 15 years to deliver an educational process to prospects to help them buy. This failure, in my opinion, is reminiscent of the copier sales in the 80s and telecoms in the following years, because no skill was required, just a cold call asking the prospect, do you want to buy a copier or do you want to lower your telecoms costs? I mean, sales and marketing is broken because everyone focuses on one-to-one selling and not one-to-many. And the inherited strategies don't work, and it's time for change. End of story. But don't, I mean, it's not just me. There's a guy, I mean, not just me advocating this, Brent Adamson, who his title is Distinguished Vice President and B2B Expert at Gartner. He reckons that too. And there's a link in the website to his article about traditional B2B sales and marketing becoming obsolete. Not many people know this, but you can stop cold calling, ditch marketing automation, and still reach your total addressable market quicker, more frequently and at a fraction of the costs and with greater accuracy and engagement and profitability than you could ever do before. So it's not about technology or costs. In fact, it's about spending less money, believe it or not. So what's required is actually a wholesale restructure of sales and marketing to help organisations start generating consistent new business. And once it's set up, it can run on autopilot for like 12 to 18 months. So there's no more unnecessary ongoing costs. But the question is, who's going to start the conversation? I mean, this explanation, this podcast, this is an explanation of what's gone wrong. And my experience over the past 30-odd years as a consultative illustration as to what can be done to put it right. I mean, okay, so it takes 20, 30 minutes. But after you've listened to this, you'll be equipped to deal with any pleadings or desirous requests from marketing people and provide some, I think, some much-needed insight and informative explanations at your next SMT or board meeting. What I've done, I mean, whilst I've got this, you know, I'm doing this as a podcast, there are some different headings that I've got on the actual document itself. And I won't read through all of them because we'll be here forever. But basically, I hope you agree with my sentiment that you are the person as a CFO to decide if what I'm actually saying is an answer to new business and long-term stability. And by reading or listening and sharing this with your colleagues, I think it could be one of the most important things you could do this year. And to start with, nothing has changed in B2B sales and marketing for the past 50 years. So the only way for a business to get back on track is to access, or rather to assess, new options from a financial perspective first. It's got to start with the cash. And that's why I've done this. And that's why it's targeted at CFOs. The performance figures and financials that you look at month after month bear out that new business is not consistent. And sales and marketing are not doing a reliable job. But finding new business has always been a nightmare. It costs a fortune and there are too many people involved in the process. And what I'm going to do is just explain what's been going wrong and how to change things, increase exposure, increase profitability, and at the same time reduce costs. It's not nonsense. I mean, it is easily achievable. But the trouble is, sales, marketing, and recruitment agencies are inadvertently stopping this information from getting through to CEOs and boards of directors. And that's why the problem's not going away. I mean, if this makes sense to you, please, you know, share this with your CEO and your colleagues, like as I mentioned earlier. And I've also, whilst I've prepared this for CFOs, I've got a separate document that is tailored towards CEOs. Anyway, that said, let's just kind of move into it. So do the figures stack up? And if you've seen this, if you came to this via the via a LinkedIn advert, you can see why I've put this on there. But do the figures stack up? And as CFO, you're the only person in the company who will evaluate something dispassionately and purely based on its, I suppose, financial viability. And that's why I say, you know, do the figures stack up? And if they don't, it's time to rethink. I mean, firstly, I'm going to explain what's been damaging B2B organisations over the past 15 years and provide an explanation and a solution for a better, just a more profitable way forward, because it's all about the numbers and addressing the one-to-one ratio of sales activity to prospects. You won't have heard anything like this before for business-to-business organisations. And my 30 years in business says that it's better for CFOs to hold on to the keys to the future of an organisation rather than entrusting them to sales and marketing. This is more fundamental than EBITDA, and you'll quickly see I'm not siding with sales or marketing. I mean, when you hear the rest of this, it's far from it. But I'm also not advocating to buy more software or more SaaS or more advertising spend. I'm just suggesting to take a look at the new business infrastructure from a different perspective. I mean, typically sales and marketing, you know, you've heard them complaining about each other. You only have to look at the past 3, 5, even 10 years turnover figures. divided by the total number of employees to see that the average is virtually static. And in the UK, it's in the region of 80 to 160 grand per person per annum. And that's between 10 and 50 employees and above. Google, by the way, is 1.5 million per person per annum. And we've got some, there's some graphs and stats on the website as well. But if you could take 50 CVs from CMOs, 50 marketing strategies, 50 marketing consultants even, and you'll see that they're all the same. And they've been the same way for the past 50 years. And the primary reason for this is because of their inability to move away from this one-to-one sales mentality that keeps hampering business. And because of the lack of success and growth, you can see why over the past nearly, 10 years, the average tenure of a CMO in the UK and the USA is only 18 months. And I think it's because they promised the earth and they failed. I mean, if you look at, you know, your role, you weren't expected to forecast year-on-year growth from just your, specifically your activity, but they do. And the trouble is, marketing people do promise the earth at the interview stage. They say they can achieve it, and then they end up kind of tail between their legs. They've got no choice but to leave after 18 months. I mean, the most recent employment record I saw on LinkedIn was someone with 18 jobs. She was the CMO at a 700-person software company, and she was in her like late 30s, maybe early 40s. She'd never stayed long enough at any one job to ascertain if her plans had ever worked. And some people say, oh, yeah, you know, the more jobs they've had, the more experience they've got. Oh, get them on board. No, I know you can sell for and against anything. But if you're moving every year or so, it means you ain't making it work. And so you can see why I've said, you know, do the figures stack up? So, I mean, as you would expect, business owners, they have to listen to their employees. But they did listen to their employees and big tech. And they accepted the return on investment argument from sales and marketing that marketing automation software was a great idea. And it would increase the flow of inbound leads. It was supposed to monitor and provide analytics and therefore help manage and target the performance of marketing, which I guess prior to automation was simply an administrative role. And it still is, in my opinion. But as working environments changed, staff began to demand ball pits and table foosball and free beer on tap on Fridays. But when the marketing processes began failing, the only option was to find someone new who could make it all work. Just as the CMO had been promised in the first place. And to attract this new person, the ball pits and free beer was a must. But the reason marketing automation doesn't work in B2B settings, and I'll stress that in B2B settings, is because they're selling products and services intended to increase profitability. Well, that makes sense, yeah? But as I said, marketing and big tech convinced CEOs to buy into it, but the evidence that they were delivering was based upon the success of B2C campaigns, selling, I don't know, trainers and jeans and cars, all of which the individual buyer can say, this looks good on me. But your typical B2B customer could never say about SaaS or technology or services or anything else like that to be, you know, this SaaS looks good on me. So within the sales process, marketing automation simply replaced that physical activity of cold calling. I know because I've done it, which was basically obtaining a compliment slip, knock on a door, obtain a compliment slip with the intention of making a telephone cold call to the prospective customer to gauge any interest. So marketing automation used by the vendor attempts to force the prospect into a transaction before defining what it is they're actually offering. So asking up front for an email address and telephone number and everything else makes people shy away. And that's where Gartner have turned around and said that 83% of prospects research online before engaging with a salesperson. So, you know, and if they give their information and get the download, they end up unsubscribing straight away. So to further support this narrative, call it a narrative, Forrester, who you've probably heard of, did a report a few years ago and said that less than 1% of B2B prospects who supposedly traverse that so-called funnel or purchasing funnel actually become revenue-generating customers. So the additional damage automation does is that it hides all of the content a company produces from all of the search engines. So if it's a PDF, you can't ascertain if the content's any good or not, even if it's being read. And this is the same with the web page. No one, not even Google, can see it if an email form needs to be completed before accessing it. I mean, but we all kind of know that Google are the preeminent measure of engaging content. So if your content was to achieve a high ranking on their search engines, like even getting to page one, then it's just simply the equivalent of getting a gold star, as it means it's well structured. And it could very well be engaging to your audience, but it doesn't guarantee success, because then you've got to hope the people are actually searching for your content in the first place. So to actually get noticed, you have to factor in the potential staggering costs of Google pay-per-click, which is supposed to bypass all the organic search process and present your banner ad on page one, as long as you've bid more than your competitors, to your prospective customers. And then the final hurdle is that your whole marketing engagement team need to have first created a good enough banner, maybe one, two or three banners, to do an ABC split test to test the copywriting that links them to a landing page. That hopefully someone on that landing page, as long as it's done properly and laid out properly, will give you their email address, and then you're back to square one. I'll just kind of bear that in mind for a moment. So with this process, this whole process I've just explained, you've got friction with pay-per-click, with the pay-per-click banner advert, does it work or not? You've got friction with the landing page, how's it laid out, is it split tested and multivariate tested and so on, and finally, friction on engagement, because you're still demanding a transaction and asking for their details before they can access the content. So now you can see why the pay-per-click for B2B and marketing automation is flawed. It's completely unsurprising. And with all that in mind, you've then got the recruitment cycle, which happens year after year, which means you take on someone new. So you take on a new CMO. You give them 3 months to get their feet under the desk, a year to implement their new marketing plan or whatever they've promised the earth to do. And as it unfolds that it's not working or making any difference, they give themselves another 3 months before they get a new job or they get fired. And if this doesn't happen at the same, say, 18-month frequency, it's usually because the CEO was forced to get so deeply involved in the marketing that it meant that the CMO couldn't be as readily fired, because the CEO was calling all the marketing shots, irrespective of he or she was qualified to do it or not. So kind of like saying lucky CMO. But also you won't see the attributes that I've been talking about and so on in a typical marketing-related CV, because the recruitment agencies, they're not business consultants. They're filtered out because the recruitment companies are simply doing their job and delivering to you what you asked for, which is, I guess, to an extent, just a better one than the one before. And don't forget, I mean, think about it, the 18-month churn is great for business. So why change anything? I mean, you just wouldn't. Nobody would. So that's why I say it's a completely biased cycle. And it makes me wonder, people go for a new job, you go, so what are you looking for? They can't say that they're looking for a new challenge, because they keep doing the same thing over and over again. And it's a bit like, I think it's a bit of a misnomer, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So what exists now is an environment where salespeople have been conditioned into waiting for leads. They rarely engage in telesales, because that's the domain of the BDRs and SDRs. So the marketers and salespeople who have rarely ever run a business are certainly not able to offer any kind of entrepreneurial ideas or advice to improve their business units, because the general consensus is that's what the SMT does, that's what the CEO does, it's they're responsible for those decisions. So naturally, their expectation is for them is to keep their heads down, just get on with it, with what they're given. You know, sales and marketing are quite happy to leave things as they are, because they're getting paid to do it. And if the SMT comes up with a new idea, fine, they'll execute it, but it's not their necks on the line. I mean, the failure, I mean, you've got to look at, I mean, I'll read some of these off, but there's a long list on there. 500,000 businesses start every year, 500,000 businesses fail every year. According to the Financial Times, 30% of all businesses fail in the first year, 50% in the second, 70% by the third, and 91% by the tenth. Harvard Business Review say 40% of invested businesses fail, period. 80% of invested businesses fail to achieve their own targets, and 95% of invested businesses fail to achieve a return on investment for their investors. It's like CB Insights, you might have heard of them. They're another, like an information publishing company. 50% of all business failures, the reasons for 50% of all the reasons for business failures are all marketing related. I mean, it's staggering. You know, the people that, you know, 83% want to engage digitally before speaking to a salesperson. Less than 1% go through the funnel. Looking at the average turnover. I mean, to date, no one seems to know what to do about this constant dilemma, because everybody's doing the same thing. I mean, fortunately, we've got an idea and a plan about this. But there's no point launching into the plan unless you've got the background and understanding what's going on. And before I get into that, just to touch on digital transformation, you know, whilst it's all the rage, and it's been like that for a while, it doesn't include sales and marketing. Got to think, have a think about that. Digital transformation, customer experience to an extent, operations, business operations and so on, great. So a business does want all the efficiency that a business process management platform can offer, like Pega, Appian, Bizagi, ServiceNow and so on. But you've got to factor in the customer. And it's not an afterthought. Customer experience is paramount to retaining customers. But if the route to becoming a customer is fraught with the nonsense you and I have always had to put up with the typical sales ploys and the closing techniques, and oh, don't forget the account-based marketing that has got to involve everybody now, yeah, because then nobody can if you involve everybody, nobody can be blamed for making a bad decision. But the customer, if you want a customer to stay a customer for long term, They've got to experience something that's worth staying with you for. So especially if there's no respect for the vendor in the first place, the customer's not going to hang around. And this will translate as a lack of loyalty on behalf of the customer, who will switch. We know they will. Irrespective of any, I don't know, kind of clever customer experience strategy or whatever. It's about genuine behaviour. I mean, there was a CEO of ServiceNow, Bill McDermott, and he's a bit of a character, but he's really flipped ServiceNow profitability-wise and so on. And he did this article in ERP Today magazine. It says, digital transformation is the practice of radically disrupting an existing problem or challenge through an entirely different lens. When the world turns on a dime, businesses need to be equipped to execute a new plan in record time. We used to talk about just in time. Now we're talking about just in case. You've got to go from linear thinking to exponential thinking. It's reported that 75% of Fortune 500 companies that are on the list today will not be on that list in 2027. Therefore, we have to think of new exponential ways to solve old problems. Digital transformation takes the concept of exponential thinking by radically disrupting convention with a completely fresh approach. Better is not good enough to solve the problems of the 21st century. And finally, it says IT architecture is now the business architecture, and the business model will be built upon the IT's ability to digitally connect with your customer. So the lack of digital sales and marketing transformation is, I think, astounding. Everyone wants to be the hero responsible for the widget getting from A to B, but there's crickets or, I don't know, like tumbleweed when it comes to sales and marketing. So we've now come kind of full circle back to the ball pits and free beers and marketing automation, MarTech stacks, without considering that cameras, mics and lights are digital products too. And they are a necessary components for marketing, But the problem is, most marketers have absolutely no experience with these types of digital creation tools, so they dismiss them as unnecessary, too expensive, or too complicated, or, it's not my job. So the bottom line is, there's only one way to break free. I say there's only one way to break free from the perpetual low performance that comes out of the result of one-to-one ratios. And that's to adopt a one-to-many mentality and a corresponding strategy. And it starts with understanding how to reach your total addressable market on a regular basis. So you've got to stop wasting time and money on cold calling and demand generation by using marketing automation platforms. So it's about communicating with the market and knowing those numbers from the outset. And the numbers are that it's commonly known that only 1% of your total addressable market are looking for your type of product each week. And you have to maneuver your business to consistently communicate with them at a relaxed and unobtrusive frequency. So your business, whatever you do, needs to have the ability to connect with and engage with as many prospects as possible and, obviously, as cost-effectively as possible, whether they're in one country or lots of different countries. Every potential prospect needs to be assured they can get every single thing they want from you 24/7, 365, all online. And if they do need to speak to someone, then a highly trained sales professional will be on hand, on chat, on Zoom, on the phone, or whichever platform the customer is on, in order to get an answer. So, I mean, if you're looking at the sizes of businesses, you know, up to 50 employees, yeah, there's 5.7 million of them in the UK. But when you get to 250 employees or more, there's 212,000. Up to 500 employees, 36,000. 500 employees and above, 8,000. So this type of approach could never be achieved using anything like telesales, BDRs, SDRs, or any other one-to-one ratio of employed infrastructure. You couldn't do it. Because off those numbers, you then got to consider how many businesses 1% equates to the types of businesses you're looking for, or your company's looking for. So then there's a process of educating prospects with, the only way I can put this is with genuine, helpful and meaningful content. I mean, this is kind of the essence of a digital selling strategy, but it's the ability to engage with prospects and for them to self-serve. So they've got to, you know, they're the ones that want to do the have an idea about something. They're the ones that want to go and research. That's why Gartner say 83% research. But you want them to be able to do that all the way through to placing an order. And with everything being on demand, there's no need for human contact. And I'm not talking AI. Forget that. I mean, I think AI should stand for artificial interest, artificial income, or artificial intent, especially when it comes to B2B marketing. So this approach isn't uncommon, though. I mean, if you look at the success of B2C, you'll see what I mean. But you're not selling trainers or jeans or high-energy drinks. And we're not talking about involving like YouTube or TikTok influencers. But say, for example, you're selling a high-value complex products or services. Your prospects expect you to have a high level of information and content available upon which they can evaluate you and place you on their own respect scale before they'll even entertain buying from you. And if it's done properly, the transition to digital selling might entail the redeployment of certain staff. But when the shift occurs in the finances of the business, at the end of the day, there's going to be less telesales people around. There's less people around, less costs. I mean, if you've got less telesales people to find prospects, less people are required to close the deals, less people are required to manage it, less commission to pay out because it's all being derived from self-service, it starts to become the kind of financial mechanism that everybody's been dreaming about. On top of that, because of producing this self-service content, the digital assets required keep increasing month on month because they're not being hidden by an email form. To support this marketing automation platform, Thereby, you increase visibility via the search engines with just drastically reduced expenditure and significantly increases overall the effectiveness of all your marketing. So at the end of the day, the gearing ratio from selling changes from one to one to one to many, which means there's no limit to the number of businesses who could investigate your products and learn how to implement them. So reaching your total addressable market and communicating with them every week can actually be achieved by one person properly trained, which would make the whole telesales operation redundant. So, I mean, in the bit of background, I mean, I started up in telecoms and technology businesses. I've personally sold millions of pounds worth of kit. And I did technology integrated with telephone systems, integrated with CRM and SaaS. I know the issues everyone's got, from running a business in the first place to telesales to field sales to installation and implementation and training. So I've done it. I've absolutely done it. And I can talk you through it step by step if you wanted me to. But the bottom line is, to nutshell this, the business has got to be clear of who and where the market is. They must easily and cost effectively be able to tell their market that they exist. And prospects must have the ability to self-serve all the way to placing an order, which means every method, every means must be available to facilitate that contact using phone, chat, video, email and live stream. I'll come on to that in a minute. So it might seem obvious to you, but as soon as any form of telesales is adopted, you flip back to a one-to-one ratio and you're completely back to square one. And if you speak to anybody in telesales now, you're looking at 300 to 400 to one success rate to find people that might be interested just by ringing them up. So phoning 400 people a week, 100 people a day, 5 days, four days to find one person that might be interested. You've got to be kidding me. So the important thing here is for you to pick up that what we're recommending and to see that the logic behind it, and that what we're saying can be implemented with the minimum amount of fuss for the least cost and the maximum benefit. And from a purely financial perspective, you would be asked, does this approach to change make financial sense? And does this make sense for new business generation? So this is pivotal. Because as a CFO, you're in the unenviable position of making a decision whether or not you mention what you're listening to your colleagues. So, I mean, for example, you're going to look at starting something like this. The process of transitioning to digital selling begins with changing the perspective of the whole engagement process. It's not about prospecting, cold calling or closing. It's aligning the business to the way in which we all go about acquiring products we like or need. So when it comes to digital selling, your business can implement this immediately. I mean, you'd have to look at what your existing teams have been doing over the past few years to see how closely they are aligned to what I'm saying. And it probably helped with us directing them in some way in the first instance. But I will point out that our own website is set up for digital selling. So we've made everything freely available. There's no forms, no nothing. There's no access codes, no emails, no logging, no direct tracking. We just know which pages people look at. So we're practicing what we're preaching. I mean, to start with, the most obvious question would be, most people say, well, how long would it take to change over to this kind of this new way of doing things? And I would say, I suppose it depends on your existing marketing and what you've used and what can be updated and adapted. But I'd recommend setting up this kind of strategy in parallel with your current strategy. So then as the new one gathers momentum, the old one can be depleted, decreased. So a stab in the dark, 4 to 6 months, give or take. That's why we'd have a chat about this in the first place anyway. But I don't want to dismiss any of the operational matters, though, because being finance orientated, I kind of presented a comprehensive illustration about execution. And the reason I say that is you're looking at persona, because you've probably heard persona and segmentation, all the buzzwords over the past few years or so. One of the fundamental things is it has to be changed to people that are looking at primary, secondary, general product and how to buy. And the reason I say that is that if you're on a website, you look at an About Us page, that's a general piece of information. You might click on a case study, which is a secondary piece. You might look at a product, a how-to video, which is a product, a product page, our classification. You might want to find out how much someone might want to find out how much is charged, or what the installation cost is. That would be classified as a how to buy page, and any kind of thought leadership, case studies, white papers, they would be classified as primary. You know, infographics and social proof, secondary. So there's a way that when we all look at information, or look at information on a website, we bounce all over the place. So where's the funnel? You can't lead score because someone's bouncing all over the place. And that's why I say, we've got this on the home page of our website, the funnel doesn't exist. It never did. It only suited the marketing automation platforms to say that you can move, you're supposed to move down this linear path, and it doesn't exist. So at the end of the day, the point is about producing multiple types of content that can be provided, because no one can second guess or make a decision what type of content people want to look at. I don't know what, you know, you're listening to this or you're reading this. I don't know if you prefer video or whether you prefer podcast or whether you prefer live stream. I have no idea. So as a provider, supplier, consultant, I have no choice but to provide all of them. And that in turn means nor do you. If you look at your website and you've got a corporate video, so what? No one's interested in corporate videos. They want to know, who are you? How do you work? Well, how do I use the kit? What? Who are the people that are using it? And so on, and the list goes on. But then, you know, you've got SEO and Tag Manager and Google Analytics are all part and parcel of what we say to make sure you get constant visibility and you can see that you're getting this content penetration and you're able to manage it. I mean, it can be difficult to visualize, especially when you've got lots of content. And that's why there's a section on the online page, but we've got specific sections on our website that say that explain how to do streaming and copywriting, photography, podcasts, video, adverts, SEO, and analytics. Anybody could go onto our website, take them about 2 or 3, maybe 4 weeks to go through and listen and watch everything. But at the end of that 4 week period, they would be one of the best marketers on the planet. Because I think we are. But if I'm not going to say it, who else is? So if you're looking at this whole process, we know selling is a numbers game. You've heard this before. You've heard the sales teams talk. You've heard the CEOs talk about this. But if you're not able to manage the numbers, if you're not able to manipulate the numbers, you're going to struggle to sell anything. And if 1% of your total addressable market are looking, then, I don't know, say for example, you've got 20,000 people. That means 200 people each week are looking. And the way to approach it, it's not complicated. If you haven't got a database, buy it. Upload the data to your CRM, upload it to LinkedIn, set up a pay-per-click campaign, and do a live stream. So you tell your total addressable market you exist, invite them to join you on a live stream, bingo. A percentage of those 200 that are looking will come and look at you. So one person can be more effective than a whole team of telesalespeople. And you tell them each week, this is what we did last week, this is what we're doing next week. And you do interviews and how to and everything else. It means zero prep, virtually zero prep. Sit down, press one button, go live onto multiple platforms. Don't need any marketing automation. And it costs pennies. Honestly costs pennies. And you just repeat it every week. So the thing is, another critical aspect, I suppose, of digital selling is to make a point of promoting, and you've got to sell the content. If you look at your own existing content, most businesses look to sell the product. Kind of logically makes sense, but it's wrong. Your prospects probably know what you sell anyway. They don't need to be told sold the product. They want to be sold the content that teaches them how to use the product. They want to be taught. They want to be educated. That's the point of this. And part of what we recommend is that we've created this strategy called Social 444. And what it means is it's posting 4 adverts 4 times a day, every day of the week for 4 weeks, and then you repeat it. But these adverts are created in-house and posted on social media, news feeds. So we're not talking about pay-per-click here. They're just being put on news feeds, which means you're producing the content. You've got your content lives on your website, and you put this information out. So people get to see your information once, maybe twice a day, maybe. So as you're selling to, I'm assuming you're selling to a business market. They'll only see your post if they're logged in and scrolling down through their newsfeed. That's why we recommend 120 adverts, which are prepped in advance, and they include like graphics and motion graphics and memes and videos, and you rotate them every month automatically. It's just a bit of software that you use. So it's unlikely that, like I said, that they'll see it, the same advert again and again. But a bit of insight to business buyers, though, this is really important. It takes 7 to 10 direct connections before a prospect recognizes your brand or company. But only 1 in 3 attempts to contact your prospect get through. Yeah? So you need 30-odd messages lined up in advance. So you can't send out more than 1 message a week because that'll just upset them. So therefore, if you're going to send out 30 messages, you've got to allow 6 or 7 months before you start reaping any reward, getting tongue-tied here. And that's another reason, or fundamental reason, why so many businesses fail, is they have got the patience. And they think that they can achieve success by employing the most basic tactic in terms of technical execution and management and cost: cold calling. Back to square one again. So the recommended content promotion strategy means you can virtually use that term. And I think people have been wanting to use this forever: set and forget. So that, you know, the adverts and the available content doesn't need to be changed for up to 12 to 18 months because it's churning. And the other point of it is it means that you can see everything prepped in advance. So in terms of kind of, financial factors and different implications, if you're a brand new business, if you think about this, if you're a brand new business, I would say, create all the necessary content in advance. And you grow your attraction strategy before even embarking on any kind of fundraising exercise, which means you end up gifting a large portion of your business to investors before you've even properly tested the market. And it might even surprise you that you wouldn't even need the size of investment in the first place. That's for a new business. For an existing business, you implement the digital strategy in parallel to the existing marketing plan, and you can ascertain who in sales can support the content development teams and so on. Implement the process to reach out to your total addressable market and gauge what elements need to be put in place. So that's just moving forward. But if you are involved in mergers and acquisitions, prior to agreeing to any kind of merger, you could implement a fact-finding task force to assess or reassess the marketing potential of that business based upon a digital selling strategy. And if you're purchasing a new business, you might want to reevaluate your forecasts and even reevaluate what you would pay for the business. So there are a variety of different reasons to do this, but the fundamental is it's going to cost an absolute fraction of every single figure that has appeared on your budgeting P&L and P&Ls, your forecasted budget projections. So if you have marketing or a content team in place, then to begin with, you need to start addressing the existing content and start preparing videos and podcasts and so on. And if you've got a database in place already, that's great. If not, then work out your addressable market, get in your database, which costs, I don't know, £350 per thousand. I know I'm getting down to the nitty-gritty here, but if you want, you know, a database of 10,000 names, so it's £3,500. In terms of costs, it's like £300 or £400 a month. You compare that to marketing automation. Compare that to Marketo, like what, £5,000 a month minimum? And if you're looking at, you know, £300 or £400 a month after you've got your database in place and so on, that includes the cost of sending out emails, auto posts on social, streaming software, multi-streaming platforms and so on. But if you needed to get other stuff in place for video and so on, you'd want to kind of acquire the most kind of cost effective and useful equipment. And we could give you a shopping list or set it up for you. But you can budget between £20,000 and £60,000. It's a one off. So go look at the middle. Yeah, in broad terms, £40,000 for the first year, £4,000 for the second year and subsequent years. And then obviously, if you need someone to go in and set it up, you can pay for that. But two people could manage the whole operation and reach out to your total addressable market. So you compare that to your current costs with telesales. So, I mean, SaaS and marketing attributed to new business and so on, you can't touch this. There's the other aspect too, and that's about using all that equipment to record and create all the other digital content you require, like the how-to videos and video to record video podcast, which is, I mean, the fact that I think Spotify has just paid out something like $500 million invested in podcasts, and YouTube are saying that they want to incentivize people to video their podcasts, so you can see where this is all going. So, I mean, you don't need me to tell you it's all a fixed asset and can be written off over 3 years. But considering the existing costs and the work effort that goes into cold calling by BDRs, coupled with that their staggeringly low success rates, nothing can compare to the strategy that this delivers. I mean, even if it cost £100,000 as a one-off cost, it's cheaper and more profitable than anything you're probably doing at the moment. But the important factor here is that we are demonstrating that we've prepared absolutely everything in advance and broken everything down to its component part to help provide like a comprehensive and robust cost illustration with supporting, I suppose, explanatory information. And to do that, I mean, again, go back to the website, go onto the page. You can see there's a modelling spreadsheet for all of the costs. There's a project execution infographic that shows the different processes and paths from the addressable market is inbound, outbound marketing, and selling digitally and so on, and what the setup and all the different processes. We've also got a digital selling organizational chart that covers technology, content and revenue that used to be IT, marketing and sales. But what I've done is I've identified every single person involved in the whole infrastructure. That's downloadable as an Excel spreadsheet, so you can mix and match and tweak that around. And the point of this is that, for example, with the technology team, it's really important that there's continuity in technical support, especially when it comes to software. So when creative people are expected to understand how the software works and devise marketing strategies using that software, like copywriting and so on and all that kind of stuff, when they leave, the expertise walks out the door. So I say that the technology team are responsible for the management and implementation of all hardware and software. Even if you are in a contract for marketing automation, it should be the technology team that looks after it. And it also means that there's crossover training within technical. So someone that's looking after the email service provider or marketing automation or analytics or data visualization and so on, it can be looked after by a group of people. So if someone leaves, you're not left in the lurch. I've got different ideas about how this can be implemented in terms of sales, personally, I think a company can have a very, very tiny sales team because the work is being done and being hived off and has become functional online because it's all self-service. And you're producing this content to help and teach and train and do whatever's needed, all online, all on demand. They're only speaking to sales when they need to buy something. So in a transitional period, if your sales team have been used to, that they get a lead here and there or whatever, and they have to go and find business themselves or do whatever they do, let them carry on. And then there's a decision that you can offer an alternative, which is to become part of the new business team. You have the A team, which is the old team, and the new business team who work hand in glove with people in marketing, in content. And on that subject regarding content, before it was called the marketing department or marketing, call it content. Get rid of the CMO, replace them, the title, not necessarily them, but replace them with an editor-in-chief because you're producing content. It needs to be edited. But you'll see all of this from the org chart. So the point is that because you're producing content, you may need more people to begin with, but gradually, through natural waste and people leaving, you can be left with a significant amount of content that sells the business and the products, and a smaller number of people that are there because you're able to market to many, to communicate to many, and sell to many with the minimum amount of fuss. So, I mean, going back somewhat, probably 2018 really, I believed that businesses needed to create cinematic type high quality video like people were doing on YouTube. And so rather than just say, tell businesses, I think you should go and do this, I invested close to about 50 grand on cameras, lighting, audio and all the gear, everything. And learned as much as I could over the past, I suppose up to now, about the past 4 years, which included editing and production and learning and watching as pretty much anything I could get my hands on. And over the next few years, including during lockdown, I realised that what was needed was a genuine restructure of the B2B kind of sales organisation because it wasn't working. And I guess I joined the dots when nobody else had. And as a result, I developed this vision or version of digital selling. And it addresses the whole cold calling issue through to the failed problems with automation and naturally aligning everything to the behaviour of people like you and I and the way that we like to buy business-related products compared to personal consumer products. I mean, I run everything. I mean, even on a small scale, I mean, I run everything on a MacBook Pro. I've got a Rodecaster Pro, which I use for podcasts. I've got multiple Panasonic DSLR cameras for photos and video, and a variety of one-touch button and switching gear that enables me to do live streaming. And you can see all of this on our website. There's lots of different examples of what we've done. And we use some software called Ecamm, which it's pretty cool, pretty clever by itself, but it enables me to press one button and live stream over Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube simultaneously, one touch. So that's why I said earlier that a couple of people can take care of this and reach thousands and thousands of people, depending on what you do. So at the end of the day, anyone can have a streaming setup, whether they're at home or an office. And looking at offices, if you've got more and more people working from home, then you've probably got some spare space at the office. So your office can be converted, a bit of sound treatment, dampen down the sound, stop the reverb happening, and create a studio, a podcast / live stream studio at your offices that people could just walk into and go and sit and broadcast. So there's lots of opportunities. I mean, and I am coming into land. I'm coming to the end. But what I've described and this overall strategy, it's straightforward. I know I've been in business long enough, 35 years I've been selling and doing my thing 30 years specifically for myself. So I know this is financially viable. And there's no chance of overspending. It requires minimum management. And it lends itself towards maximum exposure to your correct market. And it keeps every element of new business expenditure in check. One of the other things is it's monitored by using Google Tag Manager and Analytics and Data Studio. You can monitor it and get it presented on a weekly basis to see how it's doing, to see what people's engagement is, even to the point of seeing how long people are going to listen to a video or watch a video. I mean, it's what you can do with that with a combination of Tag Manager and Analytics is spectacular. It's amazing. But, you know, in terms of recruitment, well, you would use recruitment to increase sales and marketing personnel or content and revenue personnel only if it's necessary. Meaning, you know, if one of those two areas needs more support, great, more power to you, take them on. But the new organisational structure, I think, has a calming effect on attrition. Because it helps reduce the technical talent walking out the door, which, you know, is intrinsically linked to IT and not marketing. And it gives an opportunity for you as a company to evaluate this and go, well, wait a second. What if what Nigel's saying is going to work for us? How does it change? Like we said before, and like I said before, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity, vice versa. You can't expect people to turn up and go, well, we're going to do this with that with demand gen, lead gen, ABM. It doesn't work for B2B. Everybody knows it doesn't work. That's why you keep such a high number of salespeople, because they've got a black book. They're the ones that go out and try and tickle deals along and get them in. But that's not what people want. They want to be able to self-serve. And to start looking at it, going, well, wait a second, because if we do this, that means we cut these costs and we cut those costs, which means we reduce that. If you start cutting staff costs, not because they're being made redundant, but through natural wastage, I don't think that's the word somehow, but you know what I mean. So this new organisational structure, I think, would have a calming effect on attrition and I suppose helps reduce the technical talent walking out the door, whether it's technical or content or revenue related, because it's about making more sense of what's within the business. I mean, so I suppose to finish off completely, I hope you're impressed, surprised, relieved. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what would be the right description for it. But whatever it is, I hope once you've had a bit of time to think about this, that you'd be keen to share it with your colleagues and to give you and them an opportunity to explore a possible new strategy for the success of your business and the stability of your business. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope we meet at some stage. And perhaps it might be at a board meeting. Who knows? Bye for now.